previously on Wisco Weekly.
And frankly, I think dealers will be involved in flying cars. And I know that may sound like a joke, but I know it's coming.
You're serious about that?
I'm very serious. It is coming. You know, the Jetsons are here. I've seen some stuff in the works that is just a few years out. Matter of fact, at the Detroit Auto Show, a company showed a two-person drone that could be flown with an FAA license that requires very little training. You know, many people forget that most car manufacturers started with airplanes.
And on this episode...
And I don't want that suit to fall into the hands of some, you know, person who believes that he's some kind of a superhero and starts flying around and doing crazy stuff.
That's where I was going.
Yeah, I mean, but you know that's going to happen.
He's Iron Man.
This is Wisco Weekly, an automotive business podcast sharing the voices of automakers, automotive retailers, and transportation professionals who are driving and shaping the future of automotive.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Chicken brown, chicken brown, go!
Listeners, welcome to another episode of Wisco Weekly, where we share the voices of automakers, automotive retailers, and transportation professionals who are driving and shaping the future of automotive. It's only fitting that with the launch of this last season of Game of Thrones, which I am not a fan of myself, and neither is Rudy Solo as he raises his hand. Kelly, are you a fan of Game of Thrones?
I've never watched it.
See, none of us are fans here, but the rest of the whole damn world is.
And let me just say, it's very appropriate that you brought that up, considering some of the topics that we're going to discuss today about focusing on the future and science fiction, whereas I'm completely opposed to the fantasy genre. I'm not going to digress on the show, but I can do an entire hour just on that. But thank you for bringing that up.
Well, I did watch a bit of it with my wife, and I did find one really cool thing about Game of Thrones, and that was the flying, or just the dragons, because it reminded me of another favorite movie of mine, and that's Avatar. And for me, you can't help but associate dragons with the topic of flying cars. And obviously now that fits right into our wheelhouse of talking about things like the future of automotive and the future of transportation.
As I gave a speech on Friday to my office, they had a Game of Thrones party. And
I'm never going to Nixon
them,
Peabody again.
I thank you. And I told them I'm opposed to this. And I gave
because you despise it that much?
Yes.
But is it the fantasy genre or specifically Game of Thrones?
All of it.
Have you ever actually watched it?
I watched 5 minutes. If you don't give me the 5 minutes, you're out. You know how I want to tell you how I started off the speech. I should almost play the speech right here, but I won't. Here's how I started off the speech. I said, I'm going to break all your hearts, but I'm going to tell you the truth. There's no such thing as dragons. But what there will be flying cars. That I can guarantee.
See, there's a common association between flying dragons and flying cars. So I thought it'd be actually interesting, guys, if we talked about this future. Let's fast forward, whatever, 5, 10, actually probably like 30 years to imagine what this future of automotive and transportation is. And maybe we can start first with the flying car. Kelly, to you, you're a mother and a business lady.
That sounded terrible. Horrible. That was literally the worst introduction. I mean, this guy's the best introducer on earth.
I know.
I want to apologize.
That
to
was
you.
Terrible. That was
lady. When he's like looking someone in the face.
What is she at the door bringing in some Tupperware? What's the matter with you?
Oh, that's terrible. Sorry about that. All right.
So I'll wear my tweed jacket next time.
Do you have the pads, the shoulder pads from the
80s?
I do. What is Working Girl from that one movie?
Well, Working Girl.
No, Melanie Griffith and Sigourney Weaver and Harrison Ford. That's what I was thinking.
All right. It's a different turn, but yeah.
Kelly, you as a mother and a business owner, tell me what the impact of flying cars could mean to you.
Well, I do have to say that the idea of flying dragons is pretty cool.
Yeah, way better.
And Pete the Dragon. I'll just quick digression. I think that's the movie with like the big green dragon.
Doesn't exist. Dragons do not exist. Can we please focus on the future?
I'm not trying to say they exist, but I cried in the movie and it was a good one. But if the closest we can get to flying dragons is flying cars, pretty cool, I think. Always takes me back to the Jetsons days, which I'm sure a lot of people reference as we start to look at the future. But I was thinking, trying to think critically and also the bright side of flying cars. And it's hard to come up with a lot of critical aspects other than how we get there, meaning how do we build the infrastructure? How do we make the space and build the railways that the cars would fly on, quote unquote? I mean, they're not really going to fly, right? They're going to be guided on some type of aerial rail.
I don't know.
Yeah. Kelly, you brought up an excellent point. I don't know, because you if you live in Southern California, and if you're not me, then that means you're a terrible driver. Can you imagine how many terrible flyers they're going to be out there? I mean, try to wrap your head around it.
Well, so that, I guess the question would then be, do we assume it's driverless? Or because it's hard for me to believe they would regulate and feel comfortable with someone manning or womaning. Is that a word?
I don't know. Is it business ladying? Where you just walk in, you walk into your little autonomous flying jet and you wear a tweed jacket and you're just sitting there smiling.
That's right. That's right. But I think my mind assumed a driverless version only because the concept of having to attend some schooling that they could then pass that you're allowed to fly and without accidents. I mean, the risk it seems that exists with cars would be much higher with flying.
Well, you brought up a great point.
Well, I think what's interesting about the idea of flying cars is the elevation at which a car would fly at. And if we go back to present day, so you can look at the drone world and how drones aren't regulated by air traffic control. There's a certain altitude or a certain height in which airspace is controlled and unregulated. And that space, it's called Class G airspace. And so it's uncontrolled by air traffic control. And it's essentially from sea level to about a mile high.
What's C as an SEA?
Yes.
I was thinking C as an ABC. All right. Okay, glad for the clarification in case listeners were confused as well.
Thank you, business lady. So from sea level to about a mile up, that is uncontrolled airspace or unregulated airspace. So
about 5,200 feet, right?
Is that about right?
A mile, right?
Yeah, 5,200. I was going to say, I thought 36, but 52 kind of sounds right too.
I'm terrible at math. That's why I'm a lawyer.
But so essentially, you could almost think of flying cars now to operate in that space.
But how do you regulate lanes, people taking off? Again, safety-wise, the number of things that could happen with either a collision or something happens to the car. I just have to imagine the regulations would be pretty steep. And I am, I was going to say risk averse, but if I'm a gambler, can I also be risk averse? Yeah. But anyway.
You're a big contradiction.
I know. I don't like to fly. I enjoy getting to the destination, but I'm scared of flying. So in that case, I would be nervous to get in the flying car, driving myself, or if other people were driving. If we're getting to a place where they're guided on some type of railway and it's considered flying only for the fact that it's elevated, then I feel more comfortable with the safety aspect of it. And then I would say it's a huge benefit, kind of efficiency and time. I'm all about efficiency, not wasting time, making the most of time. And I think, you know, kind of measuring things as the crow flies, as opposed to all the traffic and the stoplights and turns and all of that, you get more time back in your day.
Well, and definitely the one thing about flying cars is it opens up what's called a third dimension of driving. I'll go into that a little bit more because I thought that there was Neil deGrasse Tyson actually gave a pretty good explanation of the third dimension of driving. But Rudy, to you, so, you know, perhaps aside from flying cars, you like to make a lot of unsubstantiated claims about what this future will look like. While you hate fantasy, you love science fiction. So What does, tell me in your eyes, what's this entire ecosystem of futuristic, or what the future of automotive and transportation looks like to you?
I would imagine that through some combination of artificial intelligence, proper infrastructure development and planning and financing, and technology advancing. And let's not forget, we need batteries, right? I mean, I think one of the big impediments to this future that we all want to see, I think that we all want to see it, is that it's not going to be gas powered. Like, I think we believe that this is, a lot of it's going to be based upon electricity. We want everything to be clean in the future. In California, they want, you know, no more combustible engines. They want everything clean by certain years. So you got to bring the existing law into this future, because that law has already been in place. So how do we get there? I think that this future does have flying cars. Now, Kelly's excellent question is, are they tethered to something, or are they free flying? The reality is the Federal Aviation Administration governs the vast majority of all commercial airspace, except for there's a certain amount of airspace where they don't. I think it's like 400 feet or under. I know the Department of Transportation.
I just said, it's a mile, it's sea level to a mile.
Yeah.
Class G.
Yeah, although I don't know enough about it, other than I've heard people at the Department of Transportation in Los Angeles are working hand in hand with the FAA to really relegate who governs what. So I just don't want to speak to something that I don't know a lot about. But I do think that's going to be a part of our future, because look at all that real estate that's up above us. Mm-hmm. That is real estate. Like the air above us is real estate. Somebody owns that. There are air rights and building rights and everything above us that's not being used. And if you live in Southern California, if you live in any big city, you know that we have a traffic problem. Building just more roads is not the solution. Part of the solution is thinking outside of the box. That's thinking literally up above the box. That's flying cars. That's designated lanes for micromobility, whether that be trackless people movers, electric scooters, e-bikes. I mean, dedicated lanes for connected autonomous vehicles, and not just personal vehicles. So my future, Dennis, is a collection of anything and everything that provides for safe, efficient transport of human beings of all walks of life. The disabled, young children, parents, the daily commuter. There's also another type of transit that we haven't talked a lot about here, although one of the main companies in the space is right here in Irvine, very close, and that's PRT, Personal Rapid Transit, which is an interesting concept.
That's the name of the company?
No.
That's the concept.
It's the concept. I'm not going to name the name of the company. There's two companies that I'm aware of. There's one that has a 4-passenger version of it, and there's another one that has a 2-passenger version of it that's based here in Irvine, and they haven't gotten back to me in like 7 months when they said they wanted to hire me. So I'm not going to give them a free plug here. but in any event, they have this concept of these 2-person pods on utility poles, and they
like a ski lift, right? Kind of
almost, yeah. Yeah, it's very very close to it. What they linchpin their science and their value added proposition is, hey, cars are heavy, and whether it's an electric car or whether it's a regular car, they're heavy, and that's why you need to keep rebuilding your roads, is because the roads keep getting destroyed by these heavy vehicles. If you have these lightweight pods, and you have 2 people in them, or whether it's 4 people in them, they can actually hang on these utility poles throughout the entire city, and you could connect people. That's a part of it too. Like, but it's aerial. That's what I mean. It's all about above the ground. So I think the future does have an above the ground component to it.
So every time I hear about the discussions of above the ground, it brings me back to a conversation that Neil deGrasse Tyson had on the Joe Rogan podcast, in which he was talking about these 3 dimensions of travel. The first dimension being essentially imagine traveling in a single lane and just being able to go forward and backwards. Okay, that's 1-dimensional travel.
Okay.
two-dimensional travel would be the idea now of adding more lanes, adding wider lanes. So now you can not only go forward and backward, but now you can pass left or right. Well, obviously, let's say here in Los Angeles, in Orange County, it gets more packed. People are more on the roads. You can't alleviate congestion by building out more roads. Right. So therefore, you need to go to that third level.
And wasting valuable real estate space, which we all know down here is crazy. So that's that component. Yes.
So he talks about this third dimension of travel. And third dimension of travel is essentially looking at bridges and tunnels, where you're, in the case of a bridge, you could be, you could have this elevated bridge that's going over a two-lane street. You could do the tunnel system. Okay, so instead of going above ground, you're going below ground.
Which is where the whole boring machine and Elon Musk and
that whole concept. You could even look at, whatever, the New York subway, any subway, right? Sure. That's the third dimension of travel. And I think one of the interesting things then is that, so now if we don't take a look at below the ground, we take a look at above the ground travel, there's kind of already a vehicle that operates in that space. Helicopter. Now, and then also, as people discuss these flying cars, everyone is trying to mirror it after some kind of drone/ airplane looking thing. So if you then look, if you think about how noisy helicopters are, it does then provide perhaps a little bit of perspective on how far away we will get to this idea of flying cars, because in order to have these quote unquote propellers, you need a lot of area around you. You need proper downward force. One of the challenges too is the fact that in order to get that kind of power, in order to elevate a vehicle into the air, you need fuel. Unfortunately, right. Electricity, you need literally
battery
300 pounds of batteries on you in order to lift you up.
I mean, as of now, but battery technology, I was saying, is key to the future. Yes. I mean, there's a company that I'm aware of and I've been talking to. They're in the electric bus, area. I mean, they want to build these like interconnected bus systems in cities, primarily in low or moderate income communities, whereby the buses are free and they're paid for like through solar power, but it all comes down to the batteries. The battery will dictate how our future looks, in my opinion. The lighter the battery, the more powerful it is, lithium ion, whatever it is, that's the linchpin in my opinion. Because your point of the fuel is a problem. It's finite number of fuel. It's not clean. It's expensive. It's an interesting point that you brought up on the helicopter. And I was sitting here thinking while you were talking about that, I was thinking, I will never get in a helicopter. Why? I won't do it.
Why?
Because I think that they're inherently unsafe. However, I will get into a flying car someday. Now, why? Because a car is something that I can drive, but maybe that's the wrong way to think about it. Maybe it's more along the lines of what Kelly was thinking of. Well, wait a minute. These things are going to be autonomous, or they're going to be robotic. You're actually not going to fly these things. Whereas with a helicopter, you have to have a pilot, somebody who's trained. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, I was watching we were sharing some videos today among us, and the one about the guy who kind of puts a pack on and the paramotor to head to a McDonald's. Well, first of all, he's out in like a very, I don't know where he was, where that video was from. Did you see what farm state?
You guys actually saw that? You guys, this was a video
or something? I watched it.
Yeah.
Oh really?
You should
put this into the web link. I didn't see this.
Yeah, listeners, I'll put in some videos here that we all kind of watched.
As I cruise through these cornfields and past these hay bales, let's talk a little bit about what's about to happen. So I said there's a few things that have to go right for this to go off without a hitch. The location I'm going to, there's a pretty good amount of open space to land. But I have to ensure that there's, like, it's not a busy hour. There's not a lot of people out there because, ooh, this one's tight. Tight. Because I really don't want to break any laws, and I definitely don't want to endanger anyone's safety. So for this to go off without a hitch, I got to evaluate the situation with the parking lot and the grassy area where I intend on landing.
but it's great because the mission here was to travel to McDonald's, supposedly, I guess, just a test mission here where he really wanted, you know, Big Mac.
Or it also just kind of shows, like, if this type of system is available, like if you just wanted to run everyday tasks, if you did have a hankering for a Big Mac, then strap on this propeller and get your parachute.
Yeah, except in this, if you watch the video, you'll hear about all of the education it requires in order to fly this, not to mention, I don't know, the safety and the risks, but he's looking out to make sure that when he takes off, you know, that he's taking off safely, that when he's going to land, he knows at which direction to land because of the wind speed, and are there telephone wires, and are there, you know, is there something blocking the path he was planning to land in, and he needs to be able to take off after, and how are we going to educate people and then be convinced that people, you know, have confidence in people operating these types of vehicles or modes of transportation?
Yeah. I don't know who this guy is. He's obviously very brave. He's obviously very smart, and perhaps he's producing something that we can learn from and data extrapolate from. But the vast majority of people on this earth should not be able to do this on their own.
No.
Like this is dangerous. I'm sorry. And I'm pretty sure this is illegal. Like, I don't think he got some permit to do this.
No, this is actually legal. A paramotor is legal. You don't have to, because he's operating in an airspace that's unregulated.
Okay.
Right? The second thing is you don't have to be a quote unquote certified pilot to operate this. So you are doing it by your own free will, and you will obviously incur the consequences, if any, of your own actions.
It's an interesting dichotomy, because here I am, I'm thinking about, oh my God, this guy's flying up, and what goes up must come down, and who's he going to land on? But then again, car accident, how many deaths are there a year? 40,000. And there's plenty of people out there that are unlicensed, that are terrible drivers, or they're drunk, or they're high, and they're killing people. So I don't know. Okay.
Elderly.
You know what? Yeah. You know what? All right. I get it. Fine.
Well, Kelly, I agree. He imparts a lot of knowledge as he's sharing his experience of, you know, is he riding? No, he's driving. He would be a driver. He's driving this paramotor.
He's driving that he's operating.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I recall he was talking about the wind factor, in which, again, now, in addition to somebody who would have to, whatever, make the mathematical calculations, I think the other part about it, too, is that, well, does somebody have the physical abilities to control their parachute in order to properly land? I thought another thing, too, that was interesting about that video, as well as another video that I had sent, was there was the gyrocopter. And the gyrocopter is almost essentially like another version of a helicopter,
right,
except it is this woman who audaciously goes on these little day trips in her gyrocopter. And what I think one of the things that I'm starting to see with these kinds of modes of transportation is it also requires a lot of land to take off and to land. And so, you know, this kind of gets back now to, in this day and age, you know, is it easy just to say, let's put in flying cars and all the buildings and all the roads are going to be unused? Well, that's not actually true. If you look at what actually exists out there, people still need a runway. People still need a runway to land and to take off on.
It seems like there's still going to be some stepping stones. I mean, as we're talking about different ways to travel in groups or things that exist today, I mean, I go to, of course, Disneyland, because I love Disneyland. So like the monorail at Disneyland, I mean, it's a monorail system. That's not something new. It's been around for a long time. And I don't know how expensive is that to build out that type of railway and have regular stops, at least for a large group of people.
As a bond lawyer and somebody who's obsessed with Las Vegas, every time I go to Vegas, I actually ride the monorail, the one that you have to pay for. And I ride the free ones as well. It's pretty expensive. It's not as expensive as building a subway or building like a full-on light rail, but you do need the real estate, and you do need the stations to be connected.
Right.
But you're right. The monorail has been around forever, and a lot of people thought that was going to be the future. And there have been monorails built throughout the world, smaller segments of them, but a lot of them have been taken down too. So it just didn't advance.
And what about, I don't know if this is so much like looking towards the future, but I was also, it made me think about the San Francisco trolley. It's just another way of getting around that. Does it actually run by electricity when it's connected to that? I didn't know if that was still more of a facade, but just thinking of, you know, it's run by electricity and, you know, jump on, jump off type of thing. And I don't know that I haven't heard a lot of accidents there. Again, you have to have the space, and it takes space from the streets in order to build it out. But
people need to get used to it as a part of that. Like, you look out for the trolley when you see the tracks in San Francisco. You're like, okay, there's a trolley coming. Let me get out of the way.
Right.
It's a part of their, like, we don't hear a lot about accidents today, but who knows about the past, like when it was first getting implemented, right? It probably took a little while to get it rolling.
Right.
I want to show you guys this video here of perhaps another mode of transportation.
And so, finally, there's a strange human behavior we learned, which is that when your feet feel the ground has left them, they almost want to pedal and scrabble around looking for where that surface is. That's not helpful when you've got 50 pounds of thrust coming off each leg. And those problems led to the solution of actually moving those engines slowly up the body and then consolidating them into one. And essentially that created a skirt all at the same altitude in the body, which can be likened to the three legs of a tripod. There's thrust coming out of each arm and then essentially a third leg coming out of the back of your body, which provides that uncanny stability. And that's how we learned to fly.
I can step you through what the components are. So you've essentially got an arm mount. Your arm goes inside that aluminium 3D printed tube. You've got a microgas turbine on each side, and you've got the same on the other side, obviously. And round the back, and there's one more engine, which is roughly the power of these two together. On the front here, you've got a lot of the electronic control systems and the batteries, which aren't plugged in here. Those batteries actually run the starter motors and the glow plugs. And then on the sides, you've got a couple of fuel bladders. We've also got a helmet. It's an especially lightweight one. And the extra addition to it is a heads-up display system. So,
okay, so Rudy Kelly, you guys see this gentleman, Richard Browning, who is the CEO and chief test pilot of Gravity, in which he basically has manufactured and perfected putting a jet suit on and the ability to levitate in air. And according to some of the stats, he can travel as far as, he can travel at a velocity of about 32 miles per hour. As you see from the video, he's probably about maybe anywhere from 15 to 25 feet in the air, which is enough to be above big rig trucks. What's interesting too is that there's a couple things in terms of the mask that he has, where it actually has a heads-up display, which shows him the amount of fuel left, gives him other measurements on his system, and he actually is selling these suits for right now for $440,000. And he said the problem right now is just the ability for all of the fuel to essentially, the fuel's kind of the main expense in building out these suits, because it is powered still by diesel in his case. So you need all the different parts for it and whatnot. One of his evolutions of the suit is to use electricity or use battery in order to bring the cost down. So what do you guys think of this being the future of transportation?
It's not the future of transportation. I'm not a professional that knows a lot about philosophy and philosophy history and the tenets of philosophy. There's one thing that I do remember from our philosophy casts at Servite, Occam's razor. Like, basically, you know, whatever, you have two explanations, or you know, just basically just use the easiest thing, or I don't know. Maybe that's not even a proper application. Maybe the whiskey's talking here. That's way, way too complicated, dude. That's way too complicated. Like, no way would I ever do that. There's a lot easier ways to get around, but I like the racing. I think that's entertaining. I think it's dangerous, and I don't want that suit to fall into the hands of some, you know, person who believes that he's some kind of a superhero and starts flying around and doing crazy stuff.
That's where I was going.
Yeah, I mean, you know that's going to happen.
He's Iron Man.
Yeah, basically, you know that's going to happen. But I'm glad that this guy's doing that. I'm sure we can learn a lot from this technology, but this is not a transportation option. No way.
Okay, so I agree. Mainstream transportation option, probably not. Earlier, Dennis, you made a point about short distance travel. I mean, I guess maybe there's some ability for very short distance travel, but again, today it would be completely expensive and on top of all the risks. But speaking of movies, TV shows, Minority Report, you guys have seen that one.
Excellent.
And
film.
So you have not only the driverless car pods that are on a type of railway that you would see in the case of monorails, but you have law enforcement on these types of kind of have the backpack jet suits on. So maybe you have it for like specialized forces who have been trained or, you know, in certain cases.
An excellent point. This could definitely be used in some kind of a hostage situation or some kind of a safety measure. Although I don't know. I mean, with the fuel and who knows what can happen, maybe some crazy wind. It looks more dangerous than it needs to be, dude.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm I think I'm on the other side of the fence. I actually like this kind of mode of transportation. I mean, again, I don't think you're floating that high above air that you can really hurt yourself. In terms of the fuel, it's using diesel fuel. Diesel fuel is doesn't have the same kind of combustion that regular gas has. So just by virtue of falling 15 feet in the air, you're not going to have fuel explode on you. And furthermore, he even added that in the 2 years that he has tested a variety of suits, diesel has been his primary fuel method in which he's never had any accidents with regards to the fuel part of his jet suits. So I don't know. It's interesting, and I think it paints a different picture where the future of transportation doesn't also rely on a vehicle per se,
right?
But now this personal suit.
Yeah, I mean it's not that different necessarily from the scooters that you see. I mean, scooter is not a vehicle.
It could be a vehicle actually. It has some wheels on there.
It's got wheels, but it's a right angle like stick basically. I mean, it's not that different from the engines that are on here.
It's a right angle stick.
That's
what we're referring to micromobility
now. Those things are so
right angle stick.
They're so thin and so small, and they don't take up any space. It's like the world's smallest vehicle. I mean, those are engines that are on him. So it's not that different.
All right, let's bring this home, Kelly. So as we've talked about flying cars and, you know, these other examples, the jet suit, the paramotor, in your eyes as a mother and a business lady.
that's my new term. Make sure that goes in my bio, please.
You're going to be called the business lady. Awesome. She's actually the business
Kelly,
lady. Now.
You as a mother.
I am the business lady. I look on Facebook and I ride the bird.
Yeah, he just killed you. He just killed your coolness. It's amazing. He was able to do that with one word.
Oh, wow.
So what in your eyes would need to happen in order for you to be more comfortable with the idea of flying cars, for instance?
Yeah, so not to kind of repeat, but I think for me, it would have to be something that is well controlled, that it's been tested and proven that it's safe, that there's enough controls over it, again, by way of some type of railway where there's no issue of, you know, or much less issues of crashes or user error. And I think with automated and driverless cars, that we're not that far away from it, other than, again, building the infrastructure and finding the resources, money to build the infrastructure. But again, other than that, I don't think there's a huge downside. I'd be curious, not to get into a whole other conversation, but whether do we get to a place where that's the only option, or will there always, you know, do we expect there always is current options and future options? You know, there's still the roadways, but they're much less packed, and that's a less expensive option. And then you have the, you know, is it upper class that can afford the flying?
That's,
you know,
yeah,
cars.
That's another interesting point there.
You can go to Central Park, and you can still ride a horse and buggy. Like, the horses are still around. Some people still use horses out in the rural areas to get around.
They're called Amish.
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, you're right. I mean, that's a good way to say it. That's what they are called.
Rudy, what do you see as perhaps some of the policies that we need to focus on now that would present this future 30 years from now?
It's a great question. It's not just a matter of policy. It's also a matter of just legality and real estate. At the end of the day, like when you're going into develop a brand new building, you're going into develop a brand new park, you're going to develop a brand new roadway or roofs or whatever, you got to be thinking of the future. You got to be thinking, okay, let's make this development plan, or let's make these CCNRs flexible enough whereby if something in the future allows for a helipad or drones to be delivered into certain window spacing, or you know, this flying guy or flying cars or something, it's all about when you're drafting the documents now for real estate that's going to be around for 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years, think about the possibilities for the future. Add enough flexibility, because one of the difficult things when you're dealing with real estate documents is getting consent to amend those documents, because contracts are private law. They're between two parties. Some of the parties aren't around. It's difficult to get consent. People want to get paid money to get a consent. So if you can, as you're drafting your documents now, you're thinking about the future, that's going to help you out. Mm. That's just in private development. Legally, private policy-wise, you know, I mean, it. Like I said, the FAA is the primary regulator of airspace. Local governments, and I do think the FAA need to start thinking about this type of stuff. And they are. I mean, there are, you know, Uber has been sponsoring conferences throughout the country. It's called Uber Elevate. They're doing the right thing. They're bringing the policymakers together, the FAA and the local governments, to think about how we can prepare ourselves and our government and our infrastructure for the future. So it's this connection of private company and public policymakers. And we should have these people who have these ideas and their own approaches to alternatives to just a personal vehicle talk to us about it and tell us what they need so we can direct our listeners to participate. Yes. That's what I think.
Yes, absolutely. Well, listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode of us living in this fictitious world, but certainly it's not all fictitious, because there are policies, there are legalities, there are practical applications of what we are doing today, what our society looks like today, that will influence what our society will look like in the future. Be sure you follow Wisco Weekly on Facebook, on Twitter, and Instagram. You can find us on Instagram, Wisco Weekly. So be sure you follow us. We'll be doing some traveling picks and some other good stuff on that front. Tune in next week as we end every episode. Cheers! Prost! L'chaim! Kipis nastravi! Salud! Kampai! Mabruk! Tutsin! Gambe! Yamas! To the customer experience.